Stuart Wilson Smith says he wanted to be a priest since he was a kid. Now he's all grown up and ready to finish seminary in Washington, D.C. He's being ordained with the Paulist Fathers in May 2017. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So first things first, you have a hyphenated name.
I do, yeah. No, it's not, as is sometimes presumed, my parents. My mom's actually a Heffernan, and my dad is a Wilson Smith. So the Wilson Smith goes back at least like four generations to Ireland. And we don't know when they quite came together yet. I tried to look for myself when I was there, but I never figured it out. It's a mystery. Yeah.
And I'm hearing that you didn't figure it out, and it sounds like, oh, you are from Canada.
Oh, dear. Yes, no, it is. Yeah, I thought maybe after 6 years I'd been sufficiently Americanized, but perhaps not. With certain words. I am from Canada. Yeah, I grew up in Fredericton, New Brunswick, and I was born in Nova Scotia.
Yeah. Talk about your calling to be a priest.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was very young, I had a sense that I was like meant for something. It was a very hard thing to articulate, just a sense that I should serve in some way. And it was a pretty vague idea that I tried to attach to various different things throughout my early life. And so it took on a more religious sense over the years, and like very gradually, like what does this mean? And for a while I was telling my parents that I'm going to be a minister. So I was like just taking in culture, you know, I was like watching Seventh Heaven, for example. And I was like, oh, that dad seems like a cool guy or whatever, like whatever the reference is. And it's like, well, maybe I could be him. And then I realized, it's like, well, wait, you know, if I'm gonna be Catholic, I guess the thing that they do is the priesthood, it's the Catholic priesthood. And so it took me a long time to reckon with sort of like what that would mean, and was God calling me to this, or was he not? And so it took like, I'd say, three waves at least of God saying, yes, you're called to be a priest. It took a few waves to kind of say, all right, I'll do it. And each time it was like he would call, and then I would resist, and I would try something else. And he would call again, and I'd come back, and then try something else. And so it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s that I was like, all right, so if a vocation is, and I even gave this advice to other people, like if your vocation is where like you're meant to be, where you'll find joy and a sense of fulfillment, like this is what God has for me, then why wait, you know? Because I kept saying that. I was like, I can deal with this when I'm like 38 and I can wrestle with this question. Until then I'll just live. But like, if this is where you're going to find joy and fulfillment and purpose, then just go for it.
And you had the additional question in your mind from your youth about being from two religious traditions, where your father was Anglican and your mother was Catholic?
That was a matter of discernment. I didn't call it that at the time because I didn't know what that word was. That's sort of a vocational discernment word. It was largely for me an intellectual pursuit. So I was in some ways kind of a serious kid. I was very interested in truth and what was true, what was real. And I was interested in all these existential issues about like what life means and all this, you know, this big picture stuff. And so for me, it was very natural to go on a kind of search, both within and without, to kind of say, all right, who am I and what's my place in the world? But also literally just to pick up, like I found works by like John Henry Newman. I started reading a little bit of the Fathers of the Church, the patristic writings. And sort of going back to the early sense of the church and like what did they think they were doing when they said that they were members of the church? What did that mean? And so there was very much that intellectual side of it, but then there's this other like mysterious calling that is hard to put my finger on, and yet it is probably even more important in leading me into thinking, all right, I'm definitely Catholic. John Henry Newman said I should not like to be converted by a syllogism, and I very much identify with that. There's got to be something else. And so for me, I had like all these spiritual memories, I would almost call them, like smells, for example. When I walked into the Catholic Church, there was this mix of snuffed out candles and Timbits, which are like these little donut holes from Tim Hortons that they would serve after various parish events and things like that. So like there was all this like mysterious spiritual phenomena and memory that was both in my brain, but also like just intuitively in my heart. I was like, I feel at home here. I feel comfortable here. I just feel like this is the place where God is calling me to be. And so it felt much more natural to proceed with being Catholic. Even though I chose to be Catholic, I'm going to be a Catholic priest. I have a very deep, like, spiritual connection to Anglicanism. I'm still very comfortable walking into an Anglican church, attending an Anglican Mass. I'm just comfortable with it, and I consider it more of a real blessing to have kind of grown up with an awareness of both, because they're both very important parts of who I am and how I got to be who I am today.
What in particular has attracted you to the Paulists?
Say with the Paulists, before I even met the Paulists, I was looking for a way to be a priest that was missional, so like that was outward oriented. It's not that I didn't care to be that traditional model of like a shepherd, or you know, the idea that you're going to baptize someone and then follow them through the sacraments through their whole life. You know, it's not that I entirely find that unappealing, but I was looking for something that was, you know, a sense of adventure is one thing, but also just a way of reaching out and like we see who's in the pews but who's not in the pews and that kind of thing. So I had that thread running through my life, and so when I met the Paulists and researched the Paulists, which was mostly an online activity, that way you don't have to talk to anybody, which is very, you know, it's a frightening thing to do when you're thinking about the priesthood, is the first email, the first phone call, you know. And so I learned that this was a community that had a real heart for people who were on what Pope Francis calls the peripheries, people who are on the outside, marginalized, alienated, people who feel unconnected to or unseen. I was like, yes, that I need to be a part of that. And so that's still the Paulist orientation, the disposition, the thing that we do best that still excites me a great deal.
So I know from previous conversation or email exchange that you are eager to introduce people to what you've described as the merciful and all-loving God. And how do you do that? Take that sort of off the page into one-on-one relationship.
Yeah, it's so one of the Pope's, current Pope's favorite words is accompaniment, and it can be an overly vague concept, I think. It's like, well, what does he mean by that? Is that just like a code way of saying breaking the rules or whatever? But that's not it. It's recognize that every person is like what you call an individual case, that we're all individual people. And while there are broad strokes principles, we have this deposit of faith, we have so many gifts and things in the church, a richness to offer people. Every person is someone individually made in the image and likeness of God. And every person has their own story and their own place that they're coming from. And so I think one of the most basic and fundamental ways that you can help people encounter a merciful and all-loving God is just by actually receiving the experience of another person. Because I just think that evangelization, as much as the Paulists do that and are good at it, it can't just be about output. It's like there has to be some space where people can actually tell us their story, and because I think it's all weaved together in this web of the church. That's what it's all about. It's just all these stories. So that for me is the most basic way of starting. Yeah.
What did you mean when you said some about breaking the rules, that some people think accompaniment is about breaking rules?
You know, part of this is informed by my just coming through a seminary experience. And so we have a lot of colorful debates about what some of the things that the Pope says, like, what does he mean by that? Because we're thinking, okay, we're about to go into this practical, pastoral world. And when the Pope says to accompany someone who, for example, is divorced and remarried, it's like, what is, we want to know, like, specifically, concretely, what are the steps that we can take? And so I think, you know, in your average seminary classroom, some guys are going to be desperate to have that, to the point where there's like a frustration, like, just give us that information, you know. But the fact is, the Pope doesn't give it, and that's kind of his answer, you know. And so it's up to us to when you encounter someone who is experiencing some kind of difficulty, you've got to discern the will of the Holy Spirit, you've got to receive their experience, and you can't make these sort of broad generalizations all the time. It's really, that's what accompaniment is just walking along the path and figuring it out as you go along with the person.
We have a shortage of priests.
We do.
How do you do all these things in the face of that?
Yeah, I think we have a shortage of priests, and then there's I think in the Paulists are unique, so we're a pretty small group as well, and it's like, well, we can only do so much. And I think that's very true, and I think that's also why it's important that when we take on a parish or a campus ministry, like wherever we're ministering somewhere, to try to share that spirit with people so that it's not like we're trying to do this job for ourselves. You know, there is a unique role for the priest, there's a unique role for the deacon, and for all these things in the church. But I guess an analogy that comes to mind, some people say and this is bad, but like people say, where's little Jimmy? And it's like, oh, well, his dad's babysitting him today, right? Well, that's crazy. He's the father, it's his responsibility. I think likewise, when we share responsibility, share in the church, it's not like the priest, delegating or something. It's all of our responsibilities to get this church going, to keep it running, to take care of one another, to exercise leadership. If you're baptized, this is your call. This is what you should be doing. It's not some sense of like, do this because we don't have enough of XYZ vocations. It's like we all need to share in that responsibility. And so I think part of the contribution of the Paulists and I would hope of all priests is to try to have a sense of influence and to try to just stress the importance of accompanying one another as best that we possibly can.
One role that is in our church unique to priests is the reconciliation. And I know that something you've been doing is even today is some practice runs. I think that's pretty surprising. I guess I didn't even think of that people would practice, but it makes complete sense and we would want that. So what are how does that go, the practice?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be, when we do it in a classroom, there's always going to be an inorganic kind of aspect where it's a little funny because it's seminarian and seminarian. So we know, so we have to avoid the chuckles or whatever and just try to take it as seriously as possible. But I think you want to practice a couple things. One is just the rite itself. So to have a sense of like, what's the flow of this thing so that, if someone stops you at the airport or something, you don't have to take out your right book or look it up on your iPad or something, but that God the Father mercy, so the death and resurrection of his son, et cetera, et cetera. Just to have a flow of how that goes and to get natural and comfortable with it. But also in practicing, the professor will usually give us a case, and a lot of ones they give us are maybe more rare than we'd encounter in real life, but it's still worthwhile to practice. You want to practice, for one thing, like how you respond when people share with you their sin and the things that they carry. And to just like try to receive it with an understanding that they're sharing something like extremely sacred with you that they're not sharing with anybody else probably. And so it's like, how do I receive that, right? And so that's one aspect. And then also just how to deal with, patterns of human behavior. So there's a sense in which everything else we study in formation kind of comes to a head in a certain way. Everything we learn in moral theology, everything we learn in all these other classes, it's like it should be of some use to us in this experience of the confession. So we just try to figure out how to accompany people as they deal with these things. And ultimately, to fulfill its ultimate purpose, which is really to free people, to help them experience, have an encounter with the mercy of God so that the burdens they go in with are lifted and they can walk out of there feeling the sense of life that God desires for them. So for that, it's a worthwhile practice because for me personally, I still find it like it's a bit nerve-wracking at times.
What do you wish people knew or understood about priests?
Priests, in specific, I think the priesthood itself has a lot of I rarely run into people who don't have some kind of opinion of what I'm doing. You know, I'll start with that. I'll start with that. And there's just such a great diversity of, I guess, of what people think the priesthood will be. Everything from a sense that we're going to live this like sad and lonely life, and that we're just, you know, going to have this. So yeah, just this wandering existence of, you know, nobody around. It's like, if you're not married, then what do you do with your life? You know, that kind of thing. It's, you know, so there's that vision, which I think loved ones often have because they're afraid for, they want you to be happy, right? They want you to live a life that's full and joy filled and all those things. So there's that from family. And then there's the other vision from friends who I think maybe seeing a bit too much of the Borgias and or the young pope or whatever it is, and maybe only know the church as like some political scheming sort of body that is just wrapped up in intrigue and scandal and all this stuff. When, you know, if you just walk into your average parish for 8 a.m. Mass, you just see just people, and people doing their very best to live a good and faithful life. And I mean, that's the church. And so it's that can be frustrating at times, and the best I can do is just try to live my own sense of what I think priesthood is and will be, which is primarily a service. You know, when Jesus washed his disciples' feet and said, "I give you a new model to follow," I think that's it. Just it's a life that serves people. It serves the church by serving people, and it serves people because we love people, and we love people, you know, for ourselves, but also on behalf of God, who loves people. And just to try to live that as selflessly as possible, without sort of getting caught up in what's the reward for all this, or what's the prestige that comes along with it, because there isn't any. So, yeah.
What do you think people will come to know you for as a priest? Like, how do they how do you think people will describe your style?
I hope that I would be known for being real. I think that's one of the best things you could say about a person, and that's something I hope to hang on to. You know, I've had a lot of good interactions with priests over the years. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I worry that people perceive the priests in their parish or their ministers as like out here. And a lot of them really aren't. They're trying to be accessible, but it's just for some reason this Catholic vision that can be hard to shake of like the priest is somewhere else, like he's, whether it's up on the platform or he's in some way inaccessible and all this stuff. I think if I could just be authentic and just stay myself, I think that would be of great benefit, and it would be a great blessing. That's what I hope. And to be honest with people, and to not kind of dress up things, and to, you know, if people want to talk about real issues and real life, I don't want to shy from it. I don't want topics to be off limits. I want, you know, questions and concerns and hesitations. Let's just put it all out there and be real about it.
Do you have a favorite saint?
Yeah, I can't really settle on one. I have a few. Saint Dimphna is very important to me, Irish saint, the patron saint of mental health. Saint Patrick, because of I spent a lot of time in Ireland when I was 18. So Ireland's very important to me. And my patron is St. Michael. So yeah, very hard to pick one. And I also love St. Philip Neri, because he's just, there's parts of that story that he just seems crazy. Like, he's just like, he just seems to be animated and funny. He's just sort of he's a patron of the Paulists by virtue of his having written like a lot of pamphlets and a lot of things that would sort of disseminate the faith, but he was also known around town as like a bit of a jokester, and he was very good with children, and people just liked to approach him. He was known for having he shaved off half his beard just to kind of like get a laugh type of thing. So I just read that story, I'm like, well, this is a guy for me. I like him.
You still have a full beard. Have you ever?
I do.
If you had to do it, would you?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, of course. Yeah, if somebody really thought it'd be funny, sure.
I know you're very musically talented on the guitar and in voice. Will you integrate that into your work as a priest?
Yeah, I mean, I'd hope so. One of the things, whenever I go to a new assignment, like a summer assignment or pastoral year, people like might say, "Oh, are you going to play for us during Mass or whatever?" And as much as I like to do that, I really don't. I don't find that it's where my gifts are so much. I'm not as good at like liturgical music for one reason or the other. I think my greater love is to write. And I've always played drums since I was a kid, like 11 or so. I love drumming. But songwriting I can't see that becoming not important in my life. Even if nobody heard it, I think to have an outlet where you can kind of just a place to say where you are and the experiences that you're having. And for me, it's always been very valuable for me in kind of refocusing, recentering, that sort of thing. Yeah.
What are some of the songs you've written?
Last summer, I spent part of the summer at Notre Dame studying the rites of initiation. And then after that, my superior gave me effectively almost 2 months at Lake George. So the Paulists have this summer place at Lake George, upstate New York. A great reason to become a Paulist. You can spend summers there. And I was allowed use of what was the nun's house. So the nuns used to stay there in the summer. And that was like my studio. And so I was up there and I was able to write, wrote about 14 songs, which I'm trying to trim down to like 10 or so. And I started recording and I got about 6 done. And then the school year happened and I couldn't finish it yet. And so my hope is possibly even next week to just try to finish this thing up. And I'll put it out there. And it's not like I'm going on the road to promote the thing, but like for me, I just get a lot of life out of just putting it out there. And so these are songs that are mostly about, again, real stuff, I guess, that I would consider, you know, doubt and problems with faith and struggle. And I was reflecting on some of my experiences in hospital ministry. So I was in clinical pastoral education, had some tough experiences there. And it's like, how do we experience tragedy in our lives? And how do we reckon with what God is or isn't doing in those moments? And that's the kind of thing it's about.
Anything else you'd like to share?
Yes. This is my public service announcement in a certain sense. I know from having been like on the other side of the discernment experience, it's not attractive when someone just says, "Hey, why don't you be a Paulist, for crying out loud," that kind of thing. But at the same time, I know that there's a lot of people who were in the position I was in and just trying, like, just living their lives, but also trying to find out what they're meant for. And you may feel called to the priesthood and shying away from it. And you may go to a come and see retreat, and then you may go to a second one, and then a third one, and a fourth one, but you don't want to leave your job because you're going to lose this, that, or the other title, or you've worked your way up, and like, I totally get all that. But I guess what I would say, and something I've learned from my own story, is like, you can't discern forever. You've got to take a step. You've got to take a leap. And when I look back at my own life and the joy that I have now and the sense of fulfillment I have now about to take this step, I just thank God I didn't waffle for so long that I very well could have. And so just take the leap, you know. A novitiate is not the first year of seminary. Doesn't mean you're in for life. Just give it a shot, and you'll come out a better Christian man one way or the other anyway. So.
What was your previous career?
Yeah, I bounced around a bit. Again, just had a sense of not being 100% sure what I wanted to do. I studied history at the University of Toronto, so I thought about being a history professor. But then I traveled a lot. I had a hard time staying in one place. So I worked in kitchens in Ireland, a bit of groundskeeping. When I came home, I worked security for a while and in restaurants. But my last job was I was a sales associate at a musical instrument store called Long & McQuaid, which is the biggest music chain in Canada, family-owned business, wonderful place to work. And I worked in the band department, and I also worked in sales and rentals and that kind of thing. And it was a great job, you know, but that's not the point. It's like you may have a great job and whatnot, but if you feel the call, like you just got to go for it. You know?
I do want to ask one last thing. You used the word adventure in this interview. I wanted to come back to it. What about this life is an adventure?
Well,
I think it was about the polis specifically.
It's about the polis and why the polis, and I know some people who, well, maybe not jealous of some aspects of the priestly life and maybe don't want it for themselves. It's like on paper, when I look at the places that I've been assigned just in the short time of formation, the things I've been able to experience and the people I've been able to meet, it's just pretty remarkable. You know, my novitiate year, moving to Washington, D.C., not having ever lived outside of Canada. I'm like the first member of my family to leave Canada, wow. First of all, right? So that's something. Living in Washington, D.C., the capital of the United States, you know, it's like a big deal. You know, and then my first assignment in Austin, Texas, as a novice, being down there and getting to experience what life was like there, to experience a bit of campus ministry. I've been assigned to Boston twice, the second time for a short time because I was just studying, but it's both just remarkable experiences at the Paulus Center up there. I loved it. I had a pastoral year in Columbus at the Ohio State University, and so experiencing campus ministry there. I did clinical pastoral education in New York City at NYU Medical Center, and that was just, again, such an enriching experience. Did chaplaincy at Georgetown Hospital, University Hospital here in D.C. So it's just like the wide variety of things going on. It's not just the locales, it's like the varying, you know, all this different experience. And so it's very exciting for me as someone who has always struggled to kind of stay focused and stay in one place at one time, to be told that your way of life will be to move like every 4 to 8 years. It's like, sign me up, it's fine, you know? I think it's a very exciting life to pursue, so I'm looking forward. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Stuart Wilson Smith. You can call him a deacon or father, depending on which side of May 20th, 2017 you're listening to this. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan for The Paulist Fathers. Thanks for listening.